Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome into the latest Behind the Bets podcast. Doug Kazarian, we are taping this on Thursday, January 24th, about 10 days from the Super Bowl. And Kai, we are not in studio together. I am in the desert in Las Vegas.
Yeah, I see Murray's wolf pack has grown by one, man. Good to see the boys back together.
Yeah, it's fun. I'm in Mr. Director's office. We connected this week. It was actually surreal. On Monday, I was at the South Point doing a radio spot with VSiN, Vegas Stats and Information Network. And then I'm talking to Mr. Director, and then Mr. Musburger walks over. And it was good to connect with him, and it was all surreal because I can hear his voice saying, I believe he called John Ladd, and it was fun. And Murray's going to join me momentarily. Ed Sammons is going to as well. The reason I'm out here, other than having some fun, is going behind the scenes on the making of the Super Bowl props at the Westgate. And it's a very in-depth piece, camera crew, producer, audio equipment, all the works out here. So we're going to have it for SportsCenter. I imagine, Kai, you're looking forward to that.
Oh, yeah. I've been following your coverage, you know, behind the scenes that you've been putting up. It looks really interesting. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, we went to Ed Sammons' house. And Ed is a guy who likes to lay low, although he's been gracious enough to come on the podcast before. And he will, again, later on this podcast. But Ed was super gracious. His wife opened us with, you know, welcomed us with open arms. And so did the dog, Gabby. We got some stories about Gabby I will share. Gabby was the highlight of the day. So as cool as it was seeing how they make the props, his rescue dog, Gabby, was the true hero. And we will explain how Gabby thoroughly enjoys bubbles in the hot tub. And we'll explain that.
Oh, man, who
coming up. But it really was just precious. But so Mr. Director is standing by here. We'll get with him. Ed Sammons will join us later because tonight, Kai, is a big unveiling. It's like a movie premiere. It's 7 p.m. out here. Lines everywhere, mayhem, camera crews, the unveiling of 1,000 props. And then it's all the sharps with backpacks full of cash go to town. So it is quite the spectacle. I'm looking forward to it. The camera crew's ready.
Oh, man.
And obviously they've put in tons of hours of work for this.
Yeah, I'll be following your Instagram stories, man. I got to see that.
All right. What's the money line? Do you think I make my flight tonight it's a red eye?
Ooh, not very good, my friend.
I haven't bought it yet, but I haven't quite pulled the trigger because I'm a little concerned that it's a 12:30 flight. I'm not sure if I can do it. I don't know. I hate flying too. Kai, got any reports from Bristol? How was the -1 degree weather and the snowstorm that I conveniently bailed early for?
Oh, you left just in time, my friend. It was a balmy -2 degrees on Monday.
That's criminal.
It went up to 14 degrees on Tuesday, which felt tropical. Now we're 50 degrees and pouring rain all day. But I walked into the studio today. You might as well have thought I was in Orlando because I didn't care about the rain. The 50 degrees felt wonderful.
So in a span of, 5 days, we have how many feet of snow?
Oh, we had about a foot of snow, if that, but it was the ice that was treacherous.
So a foot of snow with ice. Then wind to chill of -1 degrees and then 50 degrees in rain.
Yeah. Welcome to the Northeast.
Awesome. All right, man. Let's get to it. Mr. Director, we will join you guys, join everyone from his office in moments.
He started as a ticket writer.
Well, the handle has gotten a lot higher here in the last hour.
Now he's a race and sportsbook director.
I have the guys at work here calling me Mr. Director and not looking directly into my eyes.
With people.
Brought in a whole new staff this year. It's kind of a Seinfeld-esque move where we just rotate the guys so the material doesn't get stale, Doug.
What happened in between? A hot tub and ESPN.
Kicking is for losers.
For the first time, we are in person when taping this podcast. Mr. Director, I'm in your office. This is surreal.
Yeah, this is very strange, but it should be a good time, I think.
Technology is affording this opportunity. We did not have to go to the local ESPN radio affiliate, although that would have been a nice trip down memory lane for yours truly. You've been over there, right?
Yeah, I don't think I have the ESPNs. No. I do the ESPN radio show with those guys right in this exact chair. I just called him.
You're just like a network guy. If it's a network, then you'll relocate like to the VSiN studio.
I was at the VSiN studio on Monday. I saw you there. It really depends. If ESPN Radio needed me to go there, I would.
I was merely the warm-up act, Kai, for Mr. Director here. They brought me in before everyone had been seated, and then the marquee event, Mr. Director shows up and upstages me.
I got to recap the NFC Championship game with Brent Musburger. Brent felt that Saints call, the non-call, didn't necessarily cost New Orleans the game because there still would have been time left on the clock, and there were several other penalties that could have gone either way. I respectfully told him I disagreed with him, and I pointed out if there had been a pass interference call there, in-game wagering would have been off the board.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. So he is right. There were other calls.
Sure.
But that did cost him the game. If Sean Payton were smart, he would have taken three knees, kicked it with 20 seconds to go. Rams would not have had any timeouts. And barring a Miami miracle or Minneapolis miracle, for that matter, play, the Saints are in the Super Bowl.
Really even more unlikely than the Minneapolis miracle with no timeouts, maybe starting at the 25-yard line to get into field goal range in 10 seconds. It would have taken some sort of a hook and ladder play and getting out of bounds.
Right.
Just to kick a field goal that they would have then had to make. But apparently Zuerlein is good from about 75 yards, so they wouldn't have had to get that far.
Yeah, they really only need 15 yards.
Yeah, right. True. Apparently that guy can make field goals from 75 yards right down the middle.
So we are in the back rooms of this Las Vegas Superbook here at the Westgate, and I was there on Sunday as well for a portion of the games. I was out in the viewing area with some of our mutual friends and colleagues here in the industry, but I'm still baffled by the decision by McVay to kick the field goal on fourth and goal from literally the 4-inch line.
Yeah, I really wanted the Saints to win just because I think that would have been like the all-time kicking is for losers moment. Because, of course, McVay should have gone for the touchdown there. It should have cost his team the game, and it only didn't because the referees completely bailed them out by not calling just an egregious pass interference penalty.
I'm with you. I bet on the Rams. I picked the Rams on SportsCenter. And I wanted the Saints to win after that because I did not want to reward such buffoonery. And, you know, we were talking after it happened, and I was asking you if you had to create a list of coaches that would have kicked in that situation, where would McVay be? Like, almost dead last.
I think the second least likely. I think Sean Payton would have been the least likely. If you'd asked me that question 3 or 4 months ago, I would have said Belichick. But we saw Belichick get very conservative at times in the regular season. McVay in the top three least likely coaches to kick there, I think.
I mean, especially a week after he goes for it on fourth and goal with an 8-point lead and 4 minutes left.
Which I loved that move. You know that.
I would have kicked, but that's certainly appreciate it from a macro sense, sending a message to the team. We're going for the big kahuna, the Super Bowl title. It's not about just trying to survive in advance. Anyways, just on top of that, it was crazy that he went and he got rewarded.
He won the game, but I'm going to remember that. I'm never going to forget about that. It's a kicking us for losers moment for the history books. Unfortunately,
kicking us for losers.
That team is in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that should go down in lore. So I was out there, and obviously you were in and out, and we were all talking. It was first time I've watched like a big game in a sports book in about 7-8 years since I've been at ESPN and left Las Vegas, and I would say it was contained excitement.
Yeah, you know, the first game had a lot less handle than the second game. I don't have an explanation why, but there was much more action, much more chaos in the book for the AFC championship game than the NFC game. I think that a lot of people just looked at that NFC line and didn't know what to do with it. Mm-hmm. And we had nowhere near the volume on that second game. I'm sorry, on that first game than we did on the second game. And we didn't have nearly as many fans of the two teams in the book for the NFC game as we did the AFC game.
But even the late game, I feel like people weren't as wasted or something. Not what I remember. I remember like
I thought that was
stuff
pretty,
flying in really? The air. Like I
think, well, I would never allow that. It's a different regime with me as director. I would never allow any flying objects. No, I thought the second game was a pretty good crowd. Certainly, the fourth quarter of that game was very entertaining.
Maybe I was just dead sober, and that
you
was
think
it.
Of what it was.
Maybe that's what it was.
Yeah, that's probably. I thought the second game. I think you're spot on about the first one. But the second game, I felt we had a good energy in here. And obviously that fourth quarter, so back and forth and then into overtime. And then that game essentially coming down to a coin toss, literally. I do think Kansas City would have scored if they'd got – I mean, can never prove that, but I think Kansas City would have scored a touchdown if they'd won that coin toss. The way their offense was playing in the second half, they looked unstoppable.
Maybe. I mean, they got the benefit of some questionable PI calls as well.
They did. The Patriots had a very favorable roughing the passer penalty, which I thought was a terrible call. It was kind of funny that the difference in the two games, the NFC game, the refs let that one call go that was just egregious, like I said before, completely determined the outcome of the game. And then in the second game, the refs were calling everything both ways, very involved, especially in the fourth quarter. The referees like couldn't get out of the way and just watch the game like everybody else.
Where do you stand on this overtime thing for the NFL?
I don't really have a problem with it. I mean, I think it's everyone's complaining about how Patrick Mahomes never had the ball, and no one is pointing to the fact that in the first game, played several hours earlier, the team that got the ball first lost because their quarterback threw an interception.
Yeah, I like the narrative. Like, well, the coin flip decides who wins the game. Really? That didn't happen in the first game.
We played a game 3.5 hours earlier where New Orleans got the ball first and they lost. So I don't have a problem with it. I mean, Kansas City had 3 defensive third and longs. If they stop, I think if they stop the first one for sure, New England would have had a punt. But they make any of those stops, they probably get the ball back with a chance to win the game with a field goal. And New England basically ran the same play each time. If the safety went with Gronk, they threw to Edelman. If the safety didn't go with Gronk, they threw to Gronk. It wasn't very complicated, but apparently it was too complicated for Bob Sutton and the Kansas City defense.
Who lost his job subsequently days later.
I think he deserved to lose his job, and we saw them covering the deep ball all game long, even though Brady can't throw the ball more than 20 yards, and giving up these shorter throws to Brady and the Patriots offense. Kansas City's defensive game plan couldn't have been worse. And then obviously, I don't know what happened to them in the first half offensively, but yeah,
they weren't ready.
They were not ready
for a game of that magnitude.
Why would they defer
with
that offense? And then and in New England, typical New England fashion, they used up about half that first quarter. They went down the field. They got a touchdown.
But honestly, I'm okay with the deferring. I really am, because that has proven over time that that's the right approach. Now, look, let's say they get a stop at the end of frankly, the timeout at the end of the first half was idiotic. 3rd and 4.
And that was the
buck 11 to go. Andy Reid calls timeout like super confident in his defense on 3rd and 4 against Brady when the Pats were basically set like relegated to running out the clock because they had that 7-0 lead.
That was really the critical sequence of the game, because you're right about Kansas City would have the ball first in the second half, down 7-0, which
maybe 10-0. Maybe they pressed with like 35 seconds
possibly.
Go.
Right. But either way, let's just say it's 7-0. They get the ball first. Kansas City went right down the field and scored a touchdown on the first drive of the third quarter. Now it's 7-7. Different football game.
Well, they got bailed out in the 3rd and 3-4. Mahomes scrambles, throws the bomb to Sammy Watkins.
Yeah,
so it wasn't
true.
Like a matriculation out of the but either way, so the deferring is not a stupid call, because like it is proven that now you have a bad defense, but you're still gonna have a bad defense to start the second half if you take the kick. It's strange. But I have no issue with it per se, especially – it's strange because the Chiefs led the NFL in first quarter scoring. Their MO has been to get a lead, then release the pass rushers. It's kind of like that old Colts formula. But that's not the issue. The issue – and this goes back to the Tony Romo love fest, and I agree with it. He's great and all that. But it really wasn't that hard if I'm tweeting out the problems, and then Lewis Riddick, who obviously knows infinitely times more than I do, is tweeting the same thing I am, and Romo's saying what I'm saying. It's like, guys, it's not that complicated. These safeties are playing 50 yards downfield against a 41-year-old quarterback who the only deep throws, like even the touchdown pass at the end of the first half, which was a pseudo deep throw, was underthrown.
It was an underthrown ball that the defensive back didn't make a good play on.
Right. Yeah. So you have all these safeties playing deep, 2 of them.
Ridiculous.
And then you have these rub plays, and Edelman's open over the middle every time.
Yeah.
So all Romo's pointing out is single coverage, do it.
Here's a rub play, and there's a first down.
Right. I actually get annoyed when coaches go away from something that's working. Right? Like we talked about the Georgia-Oklahoma game a year ago in the Rose Bowl when Georgia was ripping off 11-yard carries. Mm-hmm. They start getting cute. No. The Patriots didn't get cute. They're like, all right, these knuckleheads are playing deep. I'm just going to run underneath. And if Gronk's single covered, I'll throw to him. If Edelman's going to run a rub over the middle, he's wide open.
I was talking to Ed Sammons and Jeff Sherman in the back right before you showed up, DK, and one of the things I feel like as I'm getting older, and I'm getting pretty old.
Yeah, we're cranky.
Is I know Belichick is very smart, but I'm starting to wonder, is Belichick truly a genius, or are these other coaches just a bunch of blockheads, and Belichick is just smarter than all of them, so he outsmarts all of them?
Well,
that's what I'm starting to think.
It's a couple things. It is, he is a wizard when it comes to some of the scheming, right? What he did to the Chargers.
Yeah.
And then back in the day, what he did to the, with the Giants against the Bills and things like that.
And the Patriots. Rams against the Patriots.
Right.
The Patriots, yeah.
Now, with that being said, those are all, I think, accurate assessments. But some of the other stuff, I think he gets gravy on top because the other guys make too many mistakes. We saw it in the Saints game. Refs choke just as much as players.
Sure.
Coaches choke as well. Andy Reid choked with that timeout at the end of the first half on third and four. Third and 11, okay, maybe. I'm okay.
Third and 11 is a different story, yeah.
Right. So, and they, weren't pinned back either on their own 10. They were like at their own 35-40. So I think Belichick really just kind of plays relatively intelligently at times, and it's just magnified because he has players like Brady who deliver in the clutch, and then also the other coaches have some buffoonery. I don't understand some of the stuff that was going on. It's very disappointing for a guy who had money on the Chiefs, but I really did want Kansas City in the Super Bowl too, and I love Mahomes like most of America. So it's frustrating. Give the Patriots their due. Who knows what happens without the roughing call? I think that was on second down.
It was. It was second down.
It would have been another third and long, which they converted all day.
They absolutely could have converted on third down.
Like another play. Hogan.
Don't compare that call to what happened to the Saints.
Right.
That is ridiculous. New England would have just had a third and eight. They probably would have just run the same rub play with the safety taking Gronk or Edelman, and they probably would have got a first down.
And if that didn't happen, then Kevin Hogan would have had a one-handed catch.
Chris Hogan. Kevin Hogan is
former quarterback.
Kevin Hogan is a McLean, Virginia native that played a quarterback in the NFL.
At Stanford, right?
Yes.
My bad.
That's okay.
Okay, so here we have Patriots-Rams. The Super Bowl props will be unveiled in a few hours.
Yeah.
You know, I can tell you weren't too excited the Pats were going again.
No, I don't really. I mean, I was rooting for Kansas City. I picked Kansas City. I still actually think Kansas City is better than New England is, but I give Belichick and Brady and the Patriots full credit for getting the job done. I'm not saying that they don't deserve that. I would have rather seen another matchup. I think it would have been fun. Mahomes is probably the player in this league I most enjoy watching. Watching 3.5 hours of New England running the same rub plays over and over again in the Super Bowl. Unless you're a New England Patriots fan, if you're a Patriots fan, I get that you love it. I don't blame you at all. But if you're not a Patriots fan, why would you want to watch that again when you could have had a chance to watch Patrick Mahomes in the Super Bowl? I think that would have been more.
And just someone different.
And not somebody different. Mahomes. Right, I
would have taken charges. I would have taken
Ravens,
frankly.
And somebody that's, I think, electrifying, right, who plays quarterback in a way that I've never seen anyone play quarterback before. The kinds of throws he makes, I think it would have been much more interesting as a neutral fan. But I understand that the Patriots fans are excited to see Edelman run the same rub play for 12 yards over and over and over again. And I give the Patriots full credit because we all know it's coming. I hope we do. I hope we all know it's coming, and nobody can stop it.
And they beat the team that's in front of them. It's not their fault.
No,
it's not their fault. The defense of the Chiefs is terrible.
And it's not their fault that they – well, it is their fault that they completely outcoached the Chargers the week before. That's just because of the greatness of Belichick and his schemes and his coaching staff.
So we got to talk about the line, and we're going to have Ed in here momentarily. But you guys opened Rams as the favorite even minutes after the public saw the Patriots do what they did.
Yeah, right after the Chiefs game ended, I was actually watching the AFC game with Jay Cornegay in his office. And as soon as the New England got the touchdown, I got up, I walked over to where Ed is sitting right now, and he and I talked about it. We opened the Rams 1. We both think the Rams are better than New England. That doesn't mean they're going to win in a one-game scenario, but we both think the Rams are slightly better than the Patriots. We probably misjudged just how aggressively everybody was going to bet on New England. In that moment, we didn't think of that. We should have. Mm-hmm. But reality is that we got some money on New England at +1 and pick 'em, and the money that we took is going to be just a drop in the bucket of what we take on the game. It really isn't going to matter that much.
So what are we looking at? Over 50% of the handle for the props?
Yeah, well, the last few years the prop handle has been a little bit over 50%. So there's just so many different pools go into this. We go into the game with very favorable positions in the futures pool on both New England and Los Angeles. So we go into the game with a nice head start. But I can tell you that we're going to need the Rams when this thing kicks off, because right now we're seeing about 5-1 ticket count on New England. Now I do think that'll level off a little bit just because of the sheer volume of tickets. It's not going to be 5-1 by next Sunday, but the public is definitely going to be on New England. They're all going to talk themselves into this narrative that Belichick and Brady always get it done, which is true. and that the Rams don't deserve to be there, which is also true. But that doesn't take away from the fact that I think the Rams are better than New Orleans. Than New England, excuse me.
Yeah,
I think that the Chargers and the Chiefs are better than New England on paper too, and we saw what happened there.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I put such a premium on coaching, and it's not even schematically, right? Obviously, we know that Belichick's going to do some things to rattle Goff, but it's the little things like the Dee Ford offsides. That is a byproduct. You don't see the Patriots do that.
Yeah,
I'm not saying Andy Reid screwed up.
Yeah.
I'm just saying the little things from training camp, you don't see the Patriots do that. They don't have penalties. They don't do things like that. And stuff like that is where I feel like they get all the coin flips go their way. Not that McVay's a bad coach, but we also saw McVay kick it on 4th and goal from the 6-inch line.
McVay is a worse coach in my mind than he was 4 days ago. I'll tell you that. I think Sean McVay is tremendous, but I thought that was a terrible decision. Nick Bogdanovich, the director of trading for William Hill, I heard him on VSiN a couple days ago. Nick always has really good insight on these things. And he was saying he didn't think they should have called that Dee Ford offsides. He said it didn't affect the play whatsoever. They shouldn't have called it.
But that's not.
That's the kind of break New England always gets. But I do think one thing to keep in mind is Brady knew he had that offsides call in his pocket. That's why he made that throw.
I disagree.
You think he would have made that throw knowing it wasn't a free play?
If he threw to the end zone. He didn't make a risky throw. He checked down. If he threw to the end zone.
Every throw Brady makes is a check down.
Right, but if he threw to the end zone, then I would say free play. He knew he had a free play. All the quarterbacks who see the flag knew they had a free play.
All I ever see Brady do is make a check down and throw for the sticks.
Right, so what makes – okay, so let me ask you this. What makes you think he knew the guy was offsides?
Just looking at the play, I thought he could. I thought he saw it live.
From his angle? Yeah. I don't think so.
Ford was out wide. Got even luckier than I thought they did.
Well, what about Brady's pass suggested that he knew? What about Brady's behavior, pass, whatever?
Just from watching, I don't have the replay in front of me, but just from watching the play, I got the impression that he knew that he had a free play there. The way you can see that guys know when they have a free play. But I got to do this to you in studio. I got to show you this play from the game and get your reaction live on the podcast.
All right. That's Brady throwing.
Watch the replay. Somebody shared this with me on Twitter. Look at the New England players. You got three guys.
I yelled
wide
this once. I think this is the play I yelled.
And Brady checks down to the running back.
Everybody's open.
Yeah, because all the Chiefs safeties are playing 30 yards down the field. Brady had three guys.
That's why Bob Sutton's fired, right there.
I agree. But Brady checked down to the running back. Does that mean that Brady knows where he's going to throw the ball in every play before they even snap it?
So I'm living in Hartford, Central Connecticut right now, West Hartford, and I have a lot of friends who are huge Patriots fans, and I'm unfortunately on a text log with them during Patriots games.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't need to win an argument against 9 guys. I just let them have their fun, and it actually wasn't even that bad this week. It was this is crazy.
Well, this is only an AFC championship. For Patriots fans, it's no big deal.
Right.
It's sort of an accepted that they're going to win.
But the one of them was this is the – Brady has looked as great as he's ever looked.
No.
And I said, that's not true.
No.
Because guys are emotional at times with sports. I said, look, the bar is set really high by Brady. He looks nowhere – he was amazing last year, especially in the Super Bowl, had 500 yards. He was great.
Yeah, he was.
He has looked his age the last handful of weeks, especially this game was terrible. That pick in the end zone, which you never see.
Great point.
And then he's had all his throws long were bad. He just had some off throws. He missed about 6 throws, and he usually misses 0.
Don't forget how good Brady was in 2007 when he had Randy Moss, Wes Welker. He was in the prime of his career. Yeah. I think he was 30 years old. Of course, Brady in 2007 was way better.
He won the MVP last year, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, and Brady was incredible in 2007 with Randy Moss. That's funny that you bring up that Reggie Ragland interception because we talked about that critical sequence before halftime that got them up 14-0.
Right.
If New England just scores a touchdown there, who knows what the score is at halftime? 21-0, 24-0. Then we maybe are having a completely different discussion. There is no Chiefs comeback. There is no overtime. It could be a very different game. That was a horrible play.
Yeah, I said on radio with the VSiN gentleman that, these games were coin flips. There was no right side.
I agree.
And then I was like, some pushback. The Patriots were the right side, all things considered. The Chiefs were only covering about 45 seconds.
Yeah.
But
the right side
was
the under was the right side.
Yeah. I got
that lost. I don't
seriously burned on that one.
I don't know. I mean, the Patriots Chiefs game could have very easily gone either way.
The Pats pretty much dominated the whole game.
except for the fourth quarter.
They gave up, I think, 31 points in the third and fourth quarter, though. So dominated is a bit of a stretch. But no, the Patriots, I'm not taking anything away from the Patriots. Yeah.
So here we are. Where do you think this line closes? Because this is extremely intriguing because every sharp's waiting for the full three, and it touched three.
It touched three at the South Point.
Yeah. South Point, for, I believe the report is 17 minutes, and then they got off it. So here we are 10 days or so before the Super Bowl Sunday, and you know if you get to three, it's going to be gobbled up by the sharps, but you can't just stay liable forever. We're not going to have shades of Mayweather-McGregor, are we?
No, no, it's not going to be like that. And I do think, and I know we're going to bring Ed Sammons on in a second, he thinks the number's going to come down. He thinks there will be support for the Rams. He's usually right in these scenarios. I do think he's right. But what I've been saying all along is you're going to see some variations of three all over town. Certain books are more prone to go there quicker. They get a little nervous about their liability. I'm not going to name names. But I know I can think of off the top of my head some of the books.
Elaine Bennett, are we naming names?
No. I don't want to get blacklisted anywhere in this town. But I do think that there are going to be some books that see that number. The liability number they have on New England, and I know ours is already pretty big, and they're going to get nervous, and they're going to go to a variation of three. Now, that might not be plus three, minus 110. Maybe you'll see some plus three, minus 120s out there. I saw some books already went to plus 2.5 even, and they got some money that
way. That's where I would be right now.
That'll be a common number. So I do think if you want to bet the Rams, you're probably going to get a better number than you are right now, but I don't think it's going to be there at kickoff.
So you think it'll go up to three for a little bit and then come back down?
I think it'll come back down. Because I don't think – New England is not 3 points better than the Rams. They might win next Sunday in a one-off scenario. Anything can happen. But New England is not 3 points better than the Rams.
So knowing that the handle is so big in a game like this and the number could get to three for a while, how nervous do you get of being cited?
Cited at three? I mean, it's something that you have to take
17% of games this year in the regular season landed three exactly.
And I think that – It's a harder thing to deal with for the South Point because, you know, the South Point, they will never adjust the juice.
Right.
We would be adjusting the juice most likely, maybe plus three, minus 120, or maybe minus 2.5, minus 120, like you just said. That would be more likely than us going to three, minus 10.
Why aren't you there now?
We just don't – Ed doesn't feel the need to go there right now. I agree with him right now. Our liability isn't that great on the Patriots.
I think the whole move to three is really fascinating because of the volume and the ability and potential to get cited.
Hopefully it doesn't land three.
Yeah, but you can't just hope in a Super Bowl handle. Even a Sunday night or Monday night game, you can stomach that easily.
The thing you need to always remember about the Super Bowl, and you already touched on it earlier in the show, is there's so many pools out there. The point spread pool obviously will be a huge decision for us. But we've got more than half of our handles on props. We've got the future book. We've got the total. All the secondary markets, the whole day doesn't come down to just that one side bet.
Right, but last year there was $158 million in Nevada only, and obviously we have other states now that would bet on the Super Bowl. If you're looking at half that, that's $80 million.
Right, but the side market is not half of it either.
Okay, all right.
There's so many markets. Don't forget about the money line market, the total market, first half, second half. In progress wagering is a big one.
Okay.
All the alternate point spreads. There's just so many different
ways. But you factor in a profit when you do your budgets.
Of course.
Right. That's interesting to me. When the sports book does their budgets, they factor in assumed profit.
It's all based on assumed handle.
Right.
And that's how we come up with that number. We're going into Sunday, like I said earlier, with a good head start. Right. But we went into last year, Super Bowl Sunday, with a head start. That's why, I've argued before that really that was a losing day for us.
I've said it
because
to everyone.
We were up more to start the day from the futures than what we ended up winning.
Yeah, because all the futures got graded on Super Bowl Sunday.
Philadelphia was such a big winner for us.
So you had a small winner in the overall, but it was a huge win in the futures, but loser on the game. And that's really the doomsday scenario. And in the piece that I'm doing with Ed and the guys and you and everything is I don't really touch on that because, I mean, the piece might be 6 minutes as of now. So you can't get into every nook and cranny.
Sure.
Of the coverage, but yeah, last year, all the work that went into it is very disheartening, I would imagine.
Well, it is, and I've been asked by your good friends from Follow the Money, Mitch Moss and Paulie Howard, there, Murray, why do you care how the book does? The book always wins. We put so much work into this thing, and everybody at every sports book, from the tellers all the way up to the vice presidents, they're putting so much work into this game. Of course, it's disheartening when we don't win money. I mean, I think anybody, if you worked hard on anything in your life,
Respect and pride. more than anything.
Well, if you worked extremely hard on something for weeks at a time and it was a failure, you wouldn't be disappointed by that outcome? That's crazy.
Of course you would be. All right, man. Well, let's break for now and check in with Ed momentarily. Back here on the Behind the Bets podcast, it is getting crowded in the office of Mr. Director. Ed Sammons joining us now. Ed, how are you?
Doing good, Doug. How are you?
I know it's tight in this office, but we have room for Gabby. Is she available?
Not today. Busy laying in the sun.
Yeah. Gabby was the star the other day. She is pure and precious.
Yeah, no doubt.
So I wanted to get you on and tell the story of Gabby. So I hope our listeners can appreciate this. We show up at the house about 30 minutes away from the strip. Your wonderful wife, open arms, invites us in, all this stuff. There's like six of us rolling deep with camera crew, producer, everything. And there's this little dog chirping. And it's not vicious barking. It's just getting our attention barking.
Yeah.
And your wife's like, hey, you got to come outside. Like, she's not going to stop. And we're like, all right. Like, we've never met. All six of us traipse out there. And Gabby's going nuts, just barking, barking, barking. And we walk to the hot tub and there's bubbles and Gabby's like putting her nose at the bubbles and getting a little wet. And it turns out she just wanted to show us her favorite thing.
Yes. She has to do that when new people come to the house. That's her thing.
And then all of us are, you know, dog friendly. So we're like excited with Gabby, like, look, it's bubbles. Right. So we get it. And then she does it. She has some fun with it. And then we go back in the house. We never hear from her again.
Right. Exactly.
She just wanted, it was reminding me of my wonderful niece, Charlotte, who just, when I visit, she wants to show me her favorite toys.
Yeah. No, it's, I'm telling you, the guy that comes to spray for the bugs, she's got to do the bubbles for him. I mean, it's everyone.
And your wife said that she won't stop. Like, there's no way the audio equipment will work without getting gas. We all, and fortunately, and these are guys, the crew I just met, by the way. So I'm like, how's this? What's going on here? And then it was perfect. So we had a blast.
Right.
And then Gabby was around. And any props that Gabby likes?
No. She's glad the day is over.
All right. So we were there for a long time. We appreciated the hospitality. Your wife cooked for the team and us. Just so gracious. Open arms. So, again, can't thank you enough. But let's talk about the grind that is Super Bowl prop making. Because this is something, and the piece is going to come out this weekend. But, I mean, just – you guys take huge pride in this because you are the pioneer in this regard, and other books do it too. And other books, some copy, some don't, but I mean, you guys are going to have 1,000 props tonight.
Yeah. I mean, it's, this is what we do. And this is what we essentially, the super contests and the Super Bowl props are what we're known for. So this is our bread and butter, and we definitely do take a lot of pride in it.
And this started with you and Jay Cornegay going to the next level. Cause it really started with Refrigerator Perry back in the day. And with the old infamous story, and it's in the piece, Vegas books were offering 20-1, 40-1, whatever it was, and it got bet all the way down, and the fridge scores in the 86 Super Bowl, and then the house gets rocked, but the publicity is great and a win long term. But you guys were really in the early 90s, thought you had something that you had to take to the next level.
Yeah, when Jay was at the Imperial Palace, him and Kirk Brooks are the ones that essentially started expanding in the prop menu. And then I came aboard, and I can remember when I was a teller, they asked me if I would want to make a prop on the Super Bowl. So I'm like, sure. So I'm just looking through what they have. So I came up, will Darryl Johnston have a rushing attempt? This is against Buffalo in, I believe it was the Leon Lett Super Bowl, the 52-17
one. The Rose Bowl, I believe.
Yeah, I think that was the one. And, you know, we put that up and they all bet yes, and he didn't have one. So the book did really well on that. And that kind of got me, like, you know, into the props. And then when I became a supervisor, obviously we took it to the next level.
You had a good line about saying that you realized the need for these prop bets because they were all blowouts, courtesy of the NFC. You said you looked up one day during the Super Bowl and there were guys playing cards.
Yeah. I mean, we had these Super Bowl parties and, you know, there'd be hundreds upon hundreds of people in there. All watching the game, everyone's excited. And when the second quarter or the third quarter is going on and the score's, you know, 38-3, there's nothing really going on other than the total or maybe a second half bet. And, you know, these parties have so many women and people that really aren't football fans, but they're there for the event. And, you know, everyone wants to bet on a game, but if you bet on the wrong team, even if you have the winning team, there's really nothing to watch. So the props definitely enhance the event.
Mr. Director, have you made any props, especially for this year?
No, not this year. I've tried to suggest some last year. I tried to do one last year, Gronk receiving yards against penalty yards in the game. But you didn't like that one, Ed.
Yeah, no, I think the Patriots had 5 penalty yards last year. So
I thought it would have been fun. They throw a long throw to Gronk. He doesn't catch it, but then they call pass interference. I mean, imagine the swing the prop would take on a play like that.
No doubt about it.
I thought that would have been fun. Anything that we can get the refs more involved than they already are.
Yeah. Do we have Scrabble points this year?
No. No. That's a another property did that, and that's, you know, I'm more in favor of the easier stuff. That's, I can't even look at that and figure it out.
Hey, don't you think a good prop is one that anybody can understand? I mean, isn't that like the biggest key? Like the Daryl Johnston one. Daryl Johnston, will he have a rushing attempt? Anyone could understand that. Right. That's a good prop.
Oh, absolutely. I think yes, no. Yeah. Just something simple that the average person that's not really a football fan can look at and, you know, bet it and understand what they're betting. Obviously, the more ones that are just, you know, the one that we've had problems with is, will either team score 3 straight times? And it seems simple enough, but the average person just confuses it, thinking it has to happen in a row without a punt, and then it can be answered. And that's the one that always is confusing, so we try to explain that one more. But like John's saying is, the simple ones, like, will a guy score a touchdown? That's just so simple.
You know, my first Super Bowl working here with you guys was the Patriots-Giants Super Bowl, the first one, when they were a huge underdog. And I remember the Giants were a huge underdog. And I remember the bet that I was a teller. And the bet that I took the most bets on, will Mike Vrabel score a touchdown? The Patriots linebacker, he was catching passes. I think he'd scored a touchdown against Carolina in the Super Bowl. Is that what happened? Or
yes.
He scored a touchdown in one of the Super Bowls.
No, I think it was a Carolina
and
game.
Everybody bet the yes like crazy. He did not score a touchdown. That was one of the few things we won on that day.
Right.
Super Bowl 42.
No, and people can picture that, and that's why they bet it, because they just saw it happen. It, you know, people like to picture things that they've seen happen and they can get big plus odds on, and that's the stuff they look for.
You said you would grant me a prop bet to create one if it was legit.
Of course.
So I don't even know if this is one or not. How about, will a 2-point conversion be attempted on back-to-back touchdowns by either team?
I mean, that's something we can do. Yeah. I know it happened, I believe, in the Patriots-Falcons one 2 years ago.
Because what's happened, that became the prop essentially in the fourth quarter, because you have a team either down 16 or and they get the 2-point conversion, whatever, or you have the analytics, too, with the 14-point margin, or you have a team when it's like down 6, then they go for 2, and then they don't get it, and then the next team goes for 2 because they want to go up to 3-point margin. It can be sort of the domino effect, and also you may not always want the first team who's attempting it to get it, so there's a lot of layers to the handicap.
I like the idea, but it kind of goes back to what I was saying. You've got to keep it really simple. You've got to remember who your target audience is.
Will the game feature 2-point conversion attempts on back-to-back touchdowns?
I totally understand it, but there's a target audience.
Come on.
In the Super Bowl. It's not as sophisticated as the day-to-day better. Will Mike Vrabel score a touchdown? Will Daryl Johnson?
All right, here's one.
That's easy. That's
here's
so
one.
Simple.
I got one. All right. I got one. Will the last name of the first touchdown have more letters than Kazarian? That's good, huh?
And then you've got a list in the rules.
Yeah.
Kazarian has this many letters.
Yeah. Right. We'll probably spell it wrong on the sheet, so we'll get it wrong right off the bat.
Yeah,
I'll be minus a half. Come on.
What if the guy who scores the first touchdown is a hyphenated last name? You end up in a gaming hearing that, no, it's not, his name's not this, it's just this.
A gaming hearing.
Well, here's a funny one, Doug, is, now this seems simple enough, and this was 2 years ago, Falcons-Patriots, and we use this prop now every year.
Oh, boy.
Will there be a lead change in the fourth quarter?
Sounds simple.
Sounds simple, doesn't it? Sounds like the average person can get it.
It does.
Well, let's just say there was a lot of confusion when the game was over and it was graded no.
Because they tied it?
They tied it,
and then they took the lead in overtime.
And again, what we try to do on our sheets is to kind of put in everything so the average person can look at this and 100% understand what they're betting. Yeah. So this led to us putting in a lead is defined by having more points than your opponent. In our mind, that seems simple enough, but other people looked at it differently.
So one team was leading and they changed the tie.
Right. And we, you know, that year we had lead must occur in fourth quarter.
Yeah. So we thought we were covered.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That can be confusing. I can see because most people, to your point earlier, are not huge bettors. So this is maybe their only time betting or they're maybe not that smart. You can't figure stuff out.
Well, the Super Bowl and March Madness is, it's a much more recreational crowd, I think, than any other time.
Oh, there's no doubt about it.
People that they don't know anything about betting. That's why you've got to keep it as simple as you can.
Right. You probably have, I would say, probably 50%, maybe even higher, of people betting this or in 2 weeks. The Super Bowl will be probably their only football bet of the year.
Yeah. Well, mine, because I'm in Nevada now, so I'm going to have to be able to finally bet. For the first time this week.
You can finally make a wager before you leave town tonight, DK.
What was the most difficult? Well, Sunday I did as well because I was here.
Oh, that's right.
What was the most difficult prop for you guys to haggle?
I think the one, and when I came in today, I was still thinking about it. And then I went, of course, to the NFL expert, John.
Oh, yeah.
And it's this C.J. Anderson receiving yards, total receptions, first distance of his first reception, longest reception, that one, just because that plays off of the Todd Gurley thing, which we really don't know how long he's going to play in the game and what role C.J. Anderson is going to play. If it's like the game that we saw against the Saints, I mean, C.J. Anderson was in there for every down of the second half. And, you know, he had some chances. I think he did catch a pass in that game, but it's just so hard on that one. That's the one that you just go back and forth. And it's just difficult from our end of it.
It's fascinating because you have an MVP candidate who also went over 100 yards rushing in two games ago against the Cowboys, and then, what, four carries against the Saints because of injuries or whatnot. So you're right. I almost would take him off the board. You're not going to do that, but I'm just
– Right.
It's especially hard, I think, with the reception because you're thinking he's probably going to get, what, one catch at the most, and then – so you end up with the same number for first catch – longest catch and receiving yards.
Right.
Because he's probably only going to get one catch if he even gets a catch.
That's exactly right. And
it's hard.
You know, these are the ones that the guys betting tonight are so good at. And they really are, you know, it's something that when they bet it, you know, even from the guys betting tonight, there's some that are better than others. And those guys, we really will respect their opinions as far as what they bet. And when they bet one of these things, I'll probably move all five of them according to the first bet.
So you think these guys bet to win, not to scalp in middle?
Well, there's a combination.
Right.
There's definitely some that are in here doing nothing but middling and scalping. And then you've got probably about, you know, I would say 10 to 20 of them that are 100% gambling, and they've done this as long as I can remember. And outside of last year, they win every Super Bowl.
And last year was the doomsday scenario.
I hope so.
Right.
I just hope it
record
can't get
number
worse
yards, points, everything. Just and that you guys usually need the unders on a lot of this.
Yes.
Okay. I got asked in a different interview why Ed. Is every other, besides the quarterbacks, everybody's MVP odds are so high. And wouldn't you get crushed if one of these other guys wins the MVP? I said, no, we wouldn't. If somebody other than those two quarterbacks wins MVP, probably means it was a really low-scoring game, and we probably are going to clean up on everything else.
Yeah, and it seems like if you look back 2 years ago with the Patriots-Falcons game, I mean, I'm not sure of the exact yardage that James White had, but it's hard to believe he could ever play a better game than that, and he still didn't win.
Yeah. They're not going to give it to a non-QB in a high-scoring game if they didn't give it to James White 2 years ago.
Right. And the game, it's just changed so much now towards the passing game that it's like the Heisman Trophy thing that we've discussed. It's hard for a non-quarterback to win the Heisman and the MVP of the Super Bowl unless, like John said, you get that Denver-Carolina game, which is one of our favorite Super Bowls, where essentially nothing happens and we're happy.
So we lose on Von Miller winning the MVP, but it was such a nothing game where, like, nothing happened. So our prop menu, we did awesome on that game.
And the game itself with the dog and the under. That's our dream scenario.
Absolutely. What about Greg Zuerlein, 100-1?
Yeah, I mean, he's out there. But, again, if you look at Super Bowls, probably the greatest Super Bowl kicker in our lifetime who's won multiple games is Adam Vinatieri, and he's never won a MVP. So mm-hmm. he couldn't win one. It's hard to believe that Zuerlein's going to win this MVP.
He made the big kick in the last Patriots-Rams Super Bowl, and there really was Brady didn't really do that much in that game. New England won 20-17. They had an interception return for a touchdown by Ty Law. They still gave Brady the MVP.
Yeah, and that's the game the Rams were essentially sleepwalking the whole game. The Patriots, I believe, were up 17-3. The Rams rally got two touchdowns. I remember Madden screaming at the Patriots to just knee it and go to overtime. And Belichick let Brady, who I believe was in his second year at the time, and they passed the ball down the field, and Vinatieri kicked it through a long field goal. And he absolutely deserved to be MVP, and they didn't give it to him then.
Good example of kicking is for losers way before it was so established. That's a good rule. If the announcer is telling you to knee on it, don't knee on it.
Kicking is for losers.
I think it would be a perfect ending to our season, Murray, if a kicker won the Super Bowl MVP.
I would deserve that. And I mentioned, Ed, before you came in, we were recapping the conference championship games. I said I really wanted New Orleans to win because it would have been like the all-time kicking is for losers moment. Sean McVay's ridiculous decision to kick that field goal 6 inches away from taking the lead with a touchdown. If the Rams had lost, that would have been the trademark kicking is for losers.
Yeah, I mean, we're watching the game and we're looking at each other and we see McVay like hesitating and we're all looking and we're like, no, he's not, because he's essentially like our dream coach,
the
new version where you never kick like that. And all of a sudden, here comes a kicking team and we're looking at each other just screaming, no, don't do it.
Doesn't it show that, like all jokes aside, doesn't it show that it's easy for us here in Nevada or somebody on their couch to say, oh, I'd go for it? Well, I guess when you're in that moment, it's harder to pull the trigger.
Sean Payton wanted to kick. If worst case scenario you should do is go up and do at least a hard count because you
take the
penalty.
Well, the New Orleans did that earlier in the game. I think they were going to kick a field goal.
Oh,
they 100%. Did a hard count, and they ended up scoring a touchdown to go up 13-0.
Yep.
So, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. But I'm just saying if anybody – I mean, Ed already basically said it, but if we thought anybody would go for it there, it'd be McVay.
You're right. And I think, John, you saw one of the analytics sites. What did the percentage go?
I think they said it went down. I don't remember the exact numbers. But
right, his ESPN win probability went down from before fourth down to after the field goal. So, like, basically just the potential of a score of a touchdown kept the win probability higher.
The successful field goal. That's the main thing to remember.
Right.
A successful kick. So what they were trying to do, they succeeded on, and their win probability took a step back.
By double digits.
Right. Yes.
Right.
That says a lot.
So this is kind of a strange question because you're on the other side of the counter, but we have props going up tonight. Ed, what do you think is a good bet?
You sound like my wife right now. Yeah. She's like, give me a good bet. I'm like, well, if I think it's a good bet, then I put a bad line out. So I don't think there's any good bets.
No, I disagree. Come on, Ed. This is bookmaking 101.
Well, I mean,
you're putting up numbers based on projected betting behavior of the public, not necessarily.
Right. I mean, I would say some of the guys like Gronk and Edelman not to score a touchdown will be popular tonight with the crew that are betting tonight. So that's where I would say the value is. But for the most part, people don't want to lay $2 and $1.40 on no touchdown.
What's the total in the game?
Total right now, I believe, is a 57.
So you're looking at maybe 4 touchdowns by each team.
Yeah, I think we have the touchdown props up at 6.5 over minus 135.
What do you think the public will bet on that one?
Over.
Really?
So 6-7 touchdowns, 3.5 by each team. You think Edelman and Gronk would be under, huh?
Well, yeah, no touchdown. Right.
I mean, rushing.
That's a classic example of like public versus pro. The pro bettors are going to bet the no.
Right.
But we're going to end up needing their side. These guys that are betting tonight, Thursday night for the props, we're probably going to need a lot of the sides.
Why don't you have that juiced lower for tonight?
We do have it juiced lower. Trust me, if this was a regular game, Edelman would probably be close to $2. We have it $140 tonight.
So then the pros who know you have it juiced lower because of the pros coming in, they would bet the over, some of them.
Well, they'll bet the no touchdown.
No, but the arbitragers would bet yes because they're going to get a better price on the no later. Once the public rolls into town Sunday.
You know what? The arbitrators like that are just going to bet if someone else has it up, they're going to bet right now to what they can win on or scalp right this second.
They're not going to wait. Profits. Yeah. To another book more so than – I'm not saying none of them do this, but few of them would be speculating on the market. Right. They're just going to take this and this and take their money right now.
Right, and that will continue through the 10 days where one place gets more bets on a particular prop than we do. And then because they're taking bets and getting liability, they move it where it becomes a scalp, and then they're going to be in here betting again. So
right.
It's just part of the business.
Because you're looking at about, what, 10, 11 properties in town that a lot of these arbitragers and pro bettors scalp back and forth.
It could be a new development this year, too, where we're going to have guys playing with New Jersey books to our numbers.
Right, and that's one thing that's definitely different. We have no idea what the New Jersey books are taking. We're taking two dimes on these props to the wise guys and obviously more to our house player. So I have no idea what New Jersey's taking on these props.
What do you think the overall handle is going to be? Because we've had a record in four of the last five Super Bowls. Last year, I believe, was $158.6 million in Nevada. What do you think the handle is going to be? Because I do know that money line is usually a huge part of the handle. When a short money line and a spread like this, that's a variable.
Yeah, it is. But I feel like we really haven't. I think all the Super Bowls the last couple of years have all been like less than six
for
a lot of years now. So it's kind of become the norm. So I don't think that's going to hurt the handle. I think the handle will probably go up.
You think a record again?
About 8%. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and I think that the New Jersey market is going to steal a lot of business away from illegal bookmakers on the East Coast.
Right.
I don't think it's going to steal that much business away from Nevada.
Yeah, I've always said there's only two times a year that Vegas should be, like, quote-unquote, concerned of handle going down a little bit. That'd be the Super Bowl and March Madness, because those are the only times that sports betting dictates trips to the desert. Because usually it's, hey, I'm in town for a bachelor party. It's other reasons where I'm also going to bet sports.
A big fight would be another thing. We'll get a lot of people.
Yeah, but you're still going to have those with national legalization. That's what I was saying.
Not nearly as much as the two you mentioned,
though. Right, right. But with that being said, I think the trade-off is people who do visit will be more familiar and more habitual with sports betting because they will have already done it on a daily basis. It won't be some sort of a novelty that they're in Vegas, I have to make a bet. It will already be part of their routine.
I like you pressuring Ed for a pick on the air, DK.
Oh. You know,
well, you're such an NFL expert. You got to give the people what they wanted.
Well, my pick is Rams plus three. I think that's a no-brainer. But going back to what Doug said, is probably in about 5 years, maybe a little bit less, we're going to have a Super Bowl out here. You imagine what this town's going to be like then?
And a Super Bowl in Los Angeles, I think, a year or two before that.
Yeah, so, I think LV is a Super Bowl in Los Angeles.
That's the one in LA. Yeah, that should be really good for us, too.
Right. Oh, yeah, that would be huge.
What do you think is going to happen with this line? It touched three, as we know, the other day. What do you think happens between now and kickoff with this point spread?
Well, I mean, if the game was this Sunday, I would say it would probably go to some form of three, but it's not. And, you know, the last couple years we've seen in this game is what you see the first week, and then the second week comes in where you don't think, you know, a team is going to get bets, all of a sudden it just totally reverses and the other team gets bets. And that's like surprised us. I know the Seattle New England game was like that. The first week was all Seattle bets and we're all looking at each other saying, geez, no one's going to bet the Patriots. And then the second week was the complete opposite. And the New England Atlanta game, we thought for sure that thing would get to 3.5 because the first week it was all Patriots. And then all of a sudden the second week came, we had all these people betting on the Falcons. So it definitely kept the game at 3. So I wouldn't be surprised if we went back down towards 1.5 again.
I told Doug I thought we'd see some of our competitors in Nevada. I didn't name names, of course, get a little nervous and show a variation of 3, but then close shorter than.
Right, and that I agree 100%. I think some people will want to balance their books sooner than later and, get to a form of 3. That wouldn't be surprising.
All right, man, anything else? Is this just kind of old hat to you by now?
Nah, it's just another Super Bowl and looking forward to getting everything rolling.
Any fights tonight out there in the public?
No,
these guys need to be here. They cause a fight, they might not be welcome back next year.
What about all the bad out there? I want some heists.
It's when you look at the guys betting tonight, you'll be surprised that they're as smart as they are because they're you know, a scruffy looking group, but they're a very smart looking group and they all know each other.
Yeah, they do. There is honor amongst thieves when they all see each other. I see them kind of, there's sharing of trade secrets, but it's only after they've already attacked a number or whatever it is.
Right. No doubt about
that. They're lone wolves to a certain extent, but they are all in it to win it. And they feel like they can. It's almost like this NBA. Yeah, true. There are some
pairs, groups out there that are working together. You can see them huddle in the back of the line to strategize before they start attacking.
It's almost like the sports insider world, right? Like GMs share a little bit of secrets because they want to get info on the other team. Mm-hmm. And then you see the insiders for ESPN trade as well. It's a lot of Hammurabi. Eye for an eye. They'll do a lot of that stuff too.
I can't imagine Ed is as excited about this one as he was last year, his beloved Eagles winning the Super Bowl.
Not a lot of good memories to that story.
Where's the dog mask?
The dog mask
has been retired.
But Jeff Sherman is from Los Angeles, so he's got a lot on the line this weekend.
Yeah.
Next weekend, excuse me.
He was very nervous on
Not Sunday. A Rams fan, nor am I. All right, gentlemen. Well, it's been a long week, and we're just getting started, but we appreciate the efforts. And obviously, I'm looking forward to the piece. And Ed, thank you for the hospitality.
Oh, you're welcome.
Your lovely wife and Gabby as well. It was a hoot.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Thanks to Ed Sammons and Mr. Director John Murray for the hospitality all week and obviously joining us here on the podcast. So just one podcast this week. We'll have a couple next week, some special guests as well. Don't want to tease anyone per se because I'm not 100% sure we're going to get them. I know John Murray will be back next week, but we're going to have some of our NFL coverage team, some of the high profile names, you know, talk a little betting here on the podcast as we ramp it up for Super Bowl. And that's assuming I even make it out of Las Vegas. I've been here about 6 days. So Kai, what do you think? When do I get back? When do I make it out of here?
Saturday morning, I believe.
All right.
I don't think you're
going to I believe I got a sports tomorrow. Center hit Saturday morning. So I think I got to somehow make these flights tomorrow, but
I feel like you'll roll in just in time for the hit.
I'm finally, you know, it takes a while to adjust when you travel. I'm actually just adjusted this morning. It's like, all right, I feel like this is home now.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, it's very familiar, I'm sure, so I can see that.
Yeah, it is nice. I ran into Murray yesterday in the middle of the casino, just walking into the business office to print out some stuff for my piece and just chatting it up. It's like I have never left. It's normal, ordinary behavior.
Awesome, man. You need
all
that.
Right, bud. Well, thanks to you. Thanks to everyone listening. We will get caught up next week with all of our guests, but very interesting times out here in Las Vegas and the piece. I'm looking forward to how it turns out. We'll catch up next week in Connecticut.
All right. Be safe. Travel safe.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Bets. You can listen and subscribe on the ESPN app or download and listen on Apple Podcasts.